Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Okay, we are at Rapid City, South Dakota. It is March 15th, 2019, and I am Carla Homan speaking to my dad,
Wilbert Eichmann.
Wilbert Eichmann. Okay, here we go. So, first let's start out with, where did you grow up?
I grew up on our family farm at the mailing address of Winfred, South Dakota.
And you had how many siblings?
There was 10 of us in the family, siblings. And myself being the last one born into the family.
Okay. And your mom and dad, who were they and what were they like growing up?
My dad's name was Edward Eichmann. My mother was Frances Eichmann. Her maiden name was Horning. And my mother and I were quite close because of the fact that I was the last one born into the family. And so I was her right-hand man at doing housework and chores as such as they were. My dad was a very busy man on the farm. He was making a living to support the family that we had, and he was very energetic as far as being a good supporter.
Okay. What about you? Were you a good kid? Were you well behaved as a kid?
I would say that I was an average on all aspects. I felt that I was trying to do good, and of course when I was not, and I chose to go that route, why I was disciplined very, very much so.
What was the happiest moment of your life?
That's a good question.
Too many, huh?
I was had a good childhood. I was happy being alive. We played lots of games with neighboring children as well as being our own family gatherings. But I don't classify myself as being extremely naughty. I just try to do the right thing.
How about the saddest times? Do you have any sad times in your life?
Yes, one of the saddest times was when my older sister, Elsie Eichmann, died of infantile paralysis or polio when she was like 19 years old. That was the first most saddest part. And then the second one would be when my mother died at an early age of say like 55. She was quite ill before she died, and then This is getting on later in life. I'll explain the next saddest part of my life.
Okay. What was Elsie like?
Elsie was a very fun-loving person to be around. She had so many friends in her age, and she had a talent of playing the piano without reading one note. I mean, she heard a song, why, she could sit down and play it immediately. And of course, every time that they had a gathering for young people, why, she was always asking, come play the piano for us. Mm. And there was just an energetic type of a person, fun-loving, and lots of friends.
Did you guys have a piano in your house, or?
Oh yes.
She played every.
Yes.
Every time she got a chance.
And of course, sometimes we had a piano tuner come in, and when he got done, why, then the piano tuner and my sister would play a duet on the piano. And it was
quite fun.
Yeah, really rocking the place.
Nice. Okay. Are there any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along to me?
The main thing in life is to be honest. I mean, sometimes it hurts to tell the truth. But in the end, why, the truth still wins.
That's good. How would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered for some of the things that I accomplished in life. And also be remembered as an honest person to tell the truth at unforgiving times.
Are there any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along? Or did I already ask you that?
Yes.
Sorry. What are you proudest of in your life?
I would say after retirement, we traveled for three years, and then we joined Labors for Christ, which means that we went all over the nation building churches and schools for the Missouri Lutheran Church. And we did this for 15 years. So at this time we were retired in the Black Hills of South Dakota, but we never spent a summer in the Black Hills because we were always out building churches. But it was the most rewarding time that we have experienced. We met so many good people and Christians, and be able to work with Christians, and also doing the Lord's work as well.
The great mission. Do you have any regrets?
Not really. We all have made a few mistakes in life, but we have been able to overcome them, and without regrets, because we became stronger.
And what does the future hold for you?
Well, I'm 85 years old, and I'm in good health. I am happy. I've got no regrets of being able to live this long life, and I anticipate living a lot longer.
Well, let's look into what was I like as a baby, as a young child?
It was a joyful time when you were born, and everybody just adored your coal black hair, and a lot of it. It was just a joyful time.
It's blonde now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right. A natural blonde.
Yeah. What were my siblings like?
Our oldest son, Calvin, was very protective of her, his little sister, and the twins, they had a life all by themselves. And we'll get into that later also. But basically, a good little child.
Are you proud of me?
Well, of course I'm proud of you.
That's one of the questions. Well, okay, here's one.
I am proud of the fact that you have accomplished so many good things in your life. And it just seems to me that any time that we have you in a crowd with us, you've obtained so many different friends, and everybody thinks the world of you.
Well, let's see. How did you meet Mom?
Wow.
That's a story, huh?
There was a few times that we can't say that we met formally, but we were in a group of young people, and it wasn't a personal relationship. We got introduced, but we basically met one time when we had a celebration in Canastota, South Dakota, which is not too far from our home farm. And every year they had a celebration there, and my buddy and I, we went as two of us, we went to the celebration with the Ferris wheels and rides, and the ultimate thing that night was a display of fireworks. And
was it the 4th of July,
you
think?
No, it was before the 4th of July celebration.
Okay.
Anyway, it was a case where we kept following these two girls around, and we wound up taking them home as a foursome. And that's how we first met.
Nice. Well, let's see. When did you first find out that you were going to be a parent? Well, that would have been Calvin, right?
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that?
Well, we just felt like this is part of our life. You know, I mean, we expected to have children when we got married, and lo and behold, it happened quite suddenly, and we just felt real proud of the fact that we were going to be parents.
Do you remember how old you were then? Early 20s.
Yeah, I was about 22.
Yeah.
23, maybe.
How has being a parent changed you?
I think it's a process of another phase of growing up. I always said that my wife and I, we both grew up quite rapidly due to the fact that I lost my mother when I was like 12, 13 years old. And Ellen, my wife Eleanor had the same problem of losing her dad when she was in that same age area. So when we came together and got married, why, we were both, say, we were kind of like orphans. Mm-hmm. We felt like we were, so we had to grow up fast.
Yeah.
And it just was, it was a proud moment when we were, found out that we was going to be parents.
How did you know that Mom was the one that you really wanted to marry?
Well, I would say that we grew up as Lutherans in the Missouri Lutheran, and we had a lot of, I consider, good training from our pastor and through the times that we were going through confirmation. When I was going through confirmation, we lived 17 miles from our hometown church. So times were tough, you know, not too much money involved in our family. So we took my older brother and myself to confirmation at the same time. Him being 2 years older than myself, we went to confirmation as him being older and me being younger than normal as far as going into confirmation. So our pastor would always tell us that we had to marry within our Lutheran faith. And it was always a case of, this is what the Catholics believe and this is what the Lutherans believe. This was socked into our mind when we were quite young. So when I first met Eleanor, my wife, that she was a Lutheran, which gave me the background that, well, this is a good thing to pursue. Mm-hmm. So as we did this, why, this was probably one of the most important facts as far as I was concerned at courting my wife. And it was not a short courtship either. It was from the time we met until we got married, it was like a 5-year trip. Mm-hmm. And that's one time we decided that we would not get married until I got back from the service. And that took up a lot of time and a lot of letter writing and some ups and downs. And mm-hmm. It was a great courtship.
Okay. What kind of advice would you have for young couples?
I would say counseling would be a very, very good idea, so that you both understand what it means to be a strong couple, to profess your love for each other, that it's the most important thing in a marriage, to find out that your thoughts will be always together. I mean, whatever problems may come up, why, you know that you can solve them with the right attitude. Mm-hmm. And this comes from training.
Yeah. Did you ever think of getting divorced?
Never. That was not an option.
No, never an option. What were the best times? I want you to tell me about the best times and the most difficult times. Or you can pick one or the other.
Is this considered the newly married couple, or?
I guess any time in your marriage.
Okay. Well, any time in our marriage was, the highlight was after I was in the service and came home from Korea. That was a joyful time, and the next part of that was on our wedding day. It was just ecstatic as far as being joyful at getting married. And since we went for 5 years together, everybody thought that we'd never get married. So everybody was extremely happy that for us in that area that we, and we got married the 23rd of December, but we planned this starting at Thanksgiving. So we, less than a month, we were married, where I know that some couples take years planning just to get married. Yeah. Where we felt that we had been going together long enough, so we need to get married now. Mm-hmm. And it was about the, we were a very busy couple. I mean, she was going to college and I was in trade school, both at this, after I got out of the service. So we spent this time basically growing up some more, and we finally got to the point that this is the next step in our lives.
Let's see. Let's go back and tell me what your nickname was, if you had one.
Well, I had several nicknames throughout my growing up period. I was always known as Wilbert until I got into the service. So the first nickname I had was Ike, spelled I-L-K or whatever it is.
I-C-K maybe? Yeah. I-K-E? Yeah.
Well, it was, at the time we had General Eisenhower.
Right.
In force. And of course I picked up that name. Oh, well, we'll call you Ike then, instead of Eichmann.
Okay.
And that carried through my service years. And when I got out of the service, I went to trade school and I was still known as Ike. And then after I got out of trade school, I got my first job in Luverne, Minnesota as an auto mechanic. And then my nickname got changed to Willie, for short for Wilbert. And everybody knew me as Willie. After I worked there several years, I acquired my own business. And at that time, I was called Willie's Auto Repair. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got my nickname, and it's kind of stuck through the rest of my life as Willie.
Okay, so in your working life, how did you get into the line of mechanics?
Well, that started out when I was very young. We were on the farm now. You understand that we had a lot of siblings, and of course I had a couple of my older brothers that served in the Second World War and in the Korean conflict. And So when I got to that age of growing up, I was probably 12 to 13, maybe 14 years old in that area. And there was an auto mechanic, that independent repair shop in a small town of Canoba, and where we do a lot of our grocery shopping and shopping for supplies and stuff like that. And I got to know him, and I was fascinated by he would come out to the farm and overhaul our tractors on the farm, because they had steel wheels and you couldn't transport them into town. So he would come out to the farm and overhaul the tractors. So watching him work, taking the pistons out and putting them new rings on them and putting them all back together, and lo and behold, they become alive when you started it up. And this was always my goal. I says, man, I would really like to be a mechanic. So I would go into, when we were not busy on the farm in the wintertime, into his shop, and I would scrub the floors, I would wash parts, I would do anything to be close to being into the mechanical field. So that stuck with me all the way through, and when I was drafted into the service, my goal was, when I got out, that I would go to a mechanic school and be a mechanic.
Nice.
So my dad talked to me before I left. He says, well, your brother Myron is going to get out of the service and he's going to farm. So when you go into the service, you'll have 2 years, and that should put your brother in good shape, and he can rent another place when you get out, and you can have the home farm to get started in the farming. And the kind of the saddest thing for him was the fact that I said, well, Dad, this is, I'm not, when I get out of the service, I'm not coming back to the farm. I'm going to be an auto mechanic. So when I was in the service, I had not gone to high school. So therefore, if I'm going to go into auto mechanics and go to school, it's in the college setting, I have to have an equivalent of high school education even to get into the school. So in the meantime, when I was in the service, I took the GED test so that I would be able to go right into college setting for auto mechanics when I got out of the service. So I took the GED test and I passed, and so that was kind of a, nobody told me I had to study for it. So anyway, I did pass, and I was set to go when I got out of the service. And after I got out, the first job I got was in Luverne, Minnesota. That's where we started our married life.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why you didn't go to high school?
Well,
to work on the farm?
Or? All my siblings did not go to college or high school. So when I got to high school age, they said, well, you should go to high school. I said, well, you didn't go to high school, and I'm not going to high school. So I didn't.
Well, we got a little interrupted there, but we're going to continue on. We were talking about where you, when you decided to become a mechanic, was young, and then your dad thought you should be a farmer, but you told him you were going to be a mechanic. You went to school, or no, you got your GED, and when you came back from the military, then you got to go to the trade school, mm-hmm. right? Right. Okay. How many brothers did you have?
There was six of us.
Six brothers and then three sisters. And were all the brothers in the military?
There was four of us who were in the military. Mm-hmm. Out of the six. And they were all drafted.
Everybody was drafted?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were in the military, you were in the Army.
Yes.
And where, what did you do in, as?
Okay, the first 8 weeks that I was in the Army drafted, we spent in Fort Riley, Kansas, basic infantry training. And then after that, we got shipped to, we had a short leave and was able to come home. But then we went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, for the second 8 weeks of advanced infantry training. And that was a eye-opening part of the training because during the time we were there at Fort Knox, why, it appeared like everybody was not minded as far as the military was concerned, so they went AWOL, that's away without leave. And when we got through that basic training, by the way, I did not ever go AWOL myself, but a lot of my buddies had just gone and hopefully got back in the good graces when they got back. But it was a speech from our commanding officer on the day that we left for overseas. He said that, we didn't make any awards like given to the Red Cross or anything like that, but we did come up with one award. We had the most damn AWOLs in the battalion. So that was our send-off speech. Anyway, we got transported to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And we spent a month out there waiting to get shipped overseas. So this is how the Army worked at that time. They lined everybody up the day that we shipped out in single file, and three in the file would go to Korea, one to Japan, three to Korea, one to Japan.
Oh, really?
That's how they chose your MO.
Decided, huh?
So I happened to be one that went to Japan.
Oh, okay.
So I got to go to Japan and take training on various large machines, like dirt, earth-moving machines, such as a drag line, a backhoe, shovel. Anyway, we learned how to run the heavy equipment. And then we got shipped to Korea.
Did you get to do any of the mechanics stuff that you were really interested in?
No, I did not.
In the service.
So then we got shipped to Korea, and our first job was to work on the docks of Busan, and Pier Number 4. And so we would work 12 hours on and 12 hours off, with with the idea of we're not physical labor. We are watching the stevedores do the job and make sure they are doing it right. So we had to unload ships and load ships going out. One of the finer portions of that work was there was a railroad tycoon from Detroit, Michigan, shipped over a load of locomotives and gave them to the Koreans. And our job was to unload the engine and the tinderbox that attached onto the back end of it from the ship and then put it on the dock. And they were supposed to be able to drive right off from the dock. Well, there was one locomotive that didn't even have a driver on the wheels. So it had to be towed away. We unloaded those with a 150-ton water crane, and that was a feat that was quite interesting to do because the cables were about as big as your arms. And then there was a few other incidents on that tour of duty, like there was an exchange of the North Koreans prisoners of war, the dead ones, and they came in a body bag, and they had a set of dog chain tags on their body bags so that they could be identified. And we were involved in that, getting them shipped home. And then we got shipped up to the 38th parallel. This is after the ceasefire. And at that time, we were in the infantry squad where they had us doing exercises up to the front lines. So me and my, we had a buddy that was with me. We volunteered for a steady KP. Then we wouldn't have to go up to the front line. Mm-hmm. And so then after that volunteer was, well, they made us into a cook. And we got to go to cook school and learn how to cook for 350 people every meal.
Every day, yeah. Three times a day.
Yeah, you'd sit there breaking eggs for to make scrambled eggs out of a 30 dozen case of eggs. And you learn how to crack eggs with both hands and not keep the shells out of it. So it was an interesting feat part of it there. They also had one platoon of Korean soldiers. And it so happened that there was one large Mexican ethnic person that he couldn't speak English, so they put him in the cook's tent so that he could communicate sign language if he had to. So anyway, he happened to get a pass to go into the near village, and in the meantime we thought we would rearrange our tent, our squad tent, you know, move things around so it wouldn't be all the same all the time. So we did, and not even thinking about this Mexican being on leave, when he came back, he couldn't find his bed. So all we heard was the bayonet coming out of the sheath, and the tent exploded. Everybody took off and run. Didn't want to get...
he was not happy.
get up against this drunken Mexican. They couldn't speak English. So anyway, that was one of the highlights. And another one, we actually had a trail going through the minefields, and we swam in the Inchon River for recreation. And another time we had to, being a cook, we had to take chow out up to the front lines and feed the soldiers that were at the front lines. And on the way up, we discovered a mother pheasant hen with their little ones crossing the road. So we curious if he was going to catch one of the little pheasants, and we find out after we got to the edge of the road, we found an anti-tank mine. So we backed off on that and had him reported so that they could go up and destroy it.
Were you kind of afraid then?
Yeah.
At that time?
Yeah. Okay.
What lessons did you learn from this time in your life?
Well,
besides cracking eggs.
You want to remember that I was a South Dakota boy that hadn't been out of the state, and then all of a sudden I was on the ship.
Yeah.
Pitching up and down on the storm, trying to go to Korea. It was a new experience for me, anyway.
Was that the first time you saw the ocean?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of good experiences. Other than that, why it was a joy to come home because we sailed for 4 days with not even a ripple on the sea.
Mm.
It was just as calm as could be. That's why they call it the Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
It's calm, except when you have a storm.
Okay, well, so tell me about when you came back after you went to trade school. Was that when you we're learning about the jet engines?
Oh, no. I did take
a special course. Yeah.
A mail order course.
Okay.
I mean, you learned how to work on jet engine, aircraft engines at that time. And we were thinking about, after graduating there, I was offered a job in Seattle at the Boeing plant, and to fix aircraft engines, but we decided against that because we had a young family.
You had kids and everything,
yeah.
Then. Let's talk about the religion. You said you grew up being Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced any miracles?
We have experienced miracles when we were working for Laborers for Christ. I consider it as a miracle for me because I had very little schooling and no schooling in the construction area. In some cases, it was a miracle that we got churches built. But the good Lord works in mysterious ways. I mean, He gives you a challenge, and then He shows you how to meet that challenge. And it has followed me the rest of my life about the fact that trusting in the Lord will always give you the answers if you ask for it. So we met some extremely difficult challenges. My supervisor had more faith in me than I had it myself, mm-hmm. at times. To give you an example, I had one job that was in the capital city of Montana, and it was on the Missouri River. I thought, boy, this is really going to be nice. We're going to go walleye fishing and really have a good time over there while we're building the church. So then before I even got to go, my supervisor calls me up and says, well, Willie, he says, we're going to pull you off from that job. That's too simple of a job for you. We're going to send you to Spencer, Iowa. So That's how we got to go to Spencer, Iowa, and build a complete church. The church building was a massive building. It had 24,000 square feet of construction, and it was all new. We had the sanctuary, the fellowship hall, offices for the backup people on the school that was already engaged with preschool. So,
kitchen too, right?
Big industrial kitchen. Anyway, it was a real challenge to build it because the highest part was 47 feet to the peak, and with 24,000 square feet, and it was bare land. The only thing that we had was a sewer going by the road. And so everything was a challenge to get coordinated. And I was a project manager on every church that we ever had anything to do with, from the first project we had to the last one.
How many were there?
15.
15? Yeah. Oh.
Each
one was a miracle.
Yes, right. I got to go back a ways.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working as a mechanic, and this is a peak time of my life, I was a line mechanic for major dealerships such as Lincoln Mercury, BMW, Mazda, all of these. And after going through about three or four dealers, I acquired my own business. And this was starting from scratch. I had a place out in the country outside of Sioux Falls, and we started at my double garage at my home, and we'd go pick up cars and bring them out there and fix them and take them back there and give them paid cash for them, the repair. So then after that, I acquired a small place where we get maybe four cars in there at the time. And then I hired one guy to help with it. And then pretty soon I had the second one hired. And it kept expanding. And then I, with the bank's help, bought a building in Sioux Falls, which used to be a Mercedes dealership, hired some more people, and added on to that building, and hired some more people, and we just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it finally acquired our son Calvin to come to work for us. To help, and at that time we decided, well, maybe it would be nice if we would have another shop that we could do the electrical on one side of the street and the heavy work on the other side. So we bought a vacant lot with the house on the lot right behind the one on the front side. And we tore that down and built a new shop. And things kept getting bigger, hired more people. And so now we got a shop on each side, and I got 13 line mechanics working for me. Finally, it just got to the point that Cal was about ready to take over, and I wanted to retire, so I retired, And by the way, I started this business when I was 55 years old. And people said, well, you're too old to start a business. But with the Lord's help, why, he showed me how. And that's part of my religious beliefs, that if you ask for help, you definitely will get it.
Yeah. So, obviously you believe in the afterlife. What do you think it will be like?
I hope it comes tomorrow. It's going to be glorious.
Yep.
The fact that I know that I'm going to go to heaven to be with my Lord. I absolutely believe this, that there's no doubt that I will not be in heaven.
Are you kind of scared of dying?
No.
No.
Not a bit.
No. Do you have any last wishes?
Just that when I do die, I hope I go quickly instead of being a drawn-out affair. But whatever the good Lord's will is, I'll accept it.
Mm-hmm. So, if you have any, if you were to give advice to me or my children, or even children to come in our family, what would it be?
To stay close to the Lord's word and follow his directions. You'll never go wrong.
Awesome. Do you have anything else you want to tell? Because I think that's a good way to end.
I could go on and on and on.
I know.
You know, but time allotted, this is going to be a good deal anyway.
This was awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.